sound is.
The Plant Podcast, το podcast των φυτών, με την Cut & Coach Μαριάννα Ράπου.
Ξέρεις ότι τα φυτά είναι μοναδικά? Για σκέψου. Μας τρέφουν, μας δίνουν, φροντίζουν την υγεία μας. Έλα μαζί μου να εξερευνήσουμε τον μαγικό κόσμο των φυτών. Είμαι η Μαριάννα Ράπου, η δική σου Cut & Coach, και σε καλωσορίζω στην πιο πράσινη σειρά podcast, Τι να φυτέψω σήμερα. Σε αυτό το επεισόδιο είμαι πολύ ενθουσιασμένη, γιατί καλωσορίζω τον Μάικλ Πέρι, γνωστό σε όλους μας, Mr. Plant Kick, στην πιο πράσινη σειρά podcast, Τι να φυτέψω σήμερα. Ο Μάικλ Πέρι, ένας από τους 20 πιο επιδραστικούς ανθρώπους παγκοσμίως στο χώρο της κυπουρικής, σύμφωνα με τη Sunday Times, είναι τακτικός καλεσμένος στο βρετανικό πρόγραμμα τηλεόρασης This Morning, ενώ παρουσιάζει τη δική του τηλεοπτική εκπομπή για φυτά. Με μοναδική γνώση των φυτών και των νέων τάσεων στην Κυπουρική, αλλά και με εμπειρία από διαλέξεις σε όλο τον κόσμο, από το Καναδά ως την Ιαπωνία, ο Μάικλ φέρνει φρέσκες ιδέες και δημιουργικότητα σε κάθε συζήτηση. Όπως μου εξομολογήθηκε ο Μάικλ, η αγάπη του για τα φυτά ξεκίνησε από την ηλικία των 5 ετών. Εδώ θέλω να σας πω ότι έχει ελληνική καταγωγή και οι γονείς του είχαν κτήμα με λουλούδια που τα πουλούσαν. Έτσι και εκείνος, από την ηλικία των 5 ετών, άρχιζε να είναι μέσα σε ντάλιες, τριαντάφυλλα, γαρίφαλα, οπότε όταν μεγάλωσε λιγάκι, τα έκοβε και τα πουλούσε μόνος του. Στη συνέχεια σπούδασε κυποτεχνία και έχει αναπτύξει μια μοναδική και βαθιά γνώση για τα φυτά και συνεχίζει να εμπνέει plant lovers σε όλο τον κόσμο με τις καινοτόμες ιδέες και τις φρέσκες προσεγγίσεις του. Είμαι ιδιαίτερα ευγνώμων στο Μάικλ, καθώς το podcast του με την Ellen Mary, The Plant-Based Podcast, υπήρξε για μένα πηγή έμπνευσης για τη δημιουργία της δικής μου σειράς εδώ στην Ελλάδα. Τον ευχαριστώ θερμά γι' αυτό. Ανυπομονώ να συζητήσουμε για τη μοναδική του διαδρομή στον κόσμο των φυτών, τις νέες τάσεις στα φυτά και την αποστολή του να κάνει την Κυπουρική μια διασκεδαστική και προσιτή δραστηριότητα για όλους. Welcome, Michael Perry, to Greece's greenest podcast series, What to Plant Today. It's an honor to have you share your knowledge with us today. We're excited to dive into the latest plant trends and hear your thoughts on what gardeners should be looking forward to this year. Michael, could you share with our listeners what you're currently doing in Japan?
I'm in Japan on a little two-week trip. I've been here with an English garden, which was set up about 20 years ago. And they have a gardening school, and they do the most amazing container planting. And so I'm kind of brought in here as a teacher, I guess.
Great.
To help them to build these containers, and we do lectures. I talk about new plants that are coming from Europe, different trends, different gardens. And yeah, and I'm now having like a few days of tourism as well.
So, yeah. Great. We're going to say everything about it. But I want to ask you something. Japanese gardens are renowned the world over for their beauty, simplicity, and clear lines. Most of the time, present natural landscapes with gravel, grasses, water elements, and sparsely spaced plants like landmarks. What gardens or plant combination did you come across?
Yeah, well, it's really funny because, you know, like your English garden, everybody imagines an English garden is like, you know, this cottage garden with all of these beautiful flowers and very wispy. And actually, like, most English gardens are quite different to that. And, you know, they've usually got a lawn and kind of like containers in a very different style. And the same in Japan, because the everyday gardens don't always look like what you imagine a Japanese garden to look like. Like, very often they are much more full of plants. They're much more, there's a word in Japan called wabusabi. And that means when you allow like nature to shape something man-made. So the gardens are kind of a little bit more wild, and they certainly kind of have their own personality. So I was kind of shocked when I first walked around some of the neighborhoods, because I was expecting all these tidy kind of like really minimal gardens, but they were really a lot more. And something you see a lot of that you don't always see with the Japanese gardens is bigger, like cloud-pruned conifers and trees.
Okay.
They're not really bonsai, but kind of like bigger trees that are just really well-shaped as well. And then
wow.
with a lovely mm-hmm. flower garden beyond mm-hmm. that as well. And even, you know, on Instagram today, I put up the pictures of the rose garden at Yokohama.
Yes, yes.
And that when you look at those pictures, that was not minimal in any way at all. It was maximalist because there
yes.
was roses in the borders. There was pentas, zinnia,
yes.
trachylus vermum, kind of filling every single gap.
Wow.
It was crazy. You would not walk in that and you wouldn't know what country you were in if you saw this garden. So no, Japan is not always what it seems, you know, in a good
well,
way.
Well, yes, it sounds fantastic. So everybody just go and check Instagram, Michael's Instagram, so you see some fantastic pictures and landscapes. So thank you for joining us today, and let's get started to our questions. To start off, could you tell our listeners a bit about your background and how you become known as Mr. Plant Geek? We'd love to hear the story behind your passion for plants and how it led to this fascinating nickname.
Okay. When I was a kid, I was only really interested in plants.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents, as you know, I've got some Greek grandparents.
Yes,
and one side of my family is Greek, and they were teaching me about plants and how to grow stuff and to grow to eat. And also mm-hmm. my English family were growing plants like dahlias, chrysanthemums,
mm-hmm.
lots of really cool stuff. And when I was even 10 years old, I was taking over my parents' garden and growing everything myself. And by the time I was 14 or 15, I was selling plants and making money from plants as well at the local market. And I never had any money from my parents because I made all my own money, which was pretty cool achievement for
cool
for
and
a
smart
teenager. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of always, I didn't imagine anything else I could do other than work with plants, but I didn't know what the options were. And so I went to horticultural college
mm-hmm.
and it was just a very general course about plants. And then there's a company in my hometown in Suffolk in UK called Thompson & Morgan.
Yes.
And they actually had a competition to design a garden when I was just 18 years old at the end of my college course.
Mm-hmm.
And I put together a design and I won the competition. And I wrote to them afterwards and asked for a job.
Wow.
And I then worked with them for 18 years doing product development. So introducing brand new plants.
Yes.
So going out there, finding plants and putting together the marketing, the images, all of this. And then after that, I've been freelance for about 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I built up a following on social media and online. And I'm kind of quite known in the industry and by the consumer in spreading a love of plants, really. And when I moved to freelance, I knew I needed a kind of brand name. And
mm-hmm.
I guess that's where Mr. Plant Geek came from. But
okay.
also it's taken up ownership of the word geek, because when I was at school,
yes.
I would have been bullied and like teased for liking plants and called
really?
A geek.
Yes.
But now I'm happy to be
yes.
called a geek. And this is what I built a career around. So it kind of like was a coming home type thing. So
this is
I'm really pleased.
Yes,
really
this
pleased.
Is an amazing story. How you managed to take this nickname from a bad way to a very smart and profitable and such a challenging way. And now you are famous and popular, like just as Plant Geek. This is amazing.
Totally. Yeah.
And very nice to
know. It's funny, it's not until I tell the story again that I remember and I realize, that is pretty cool. Yeah.
It is. Good for you and good for us.
Thank you.
So now, Mr. Plant Geek, recently I saw you at Glee Birmingham. Glee is one of the UK's foremost outdoor living expos and garden trade shows, and you were building the future plants display. What are some of the most exciting plant trends you're seeing for this season?
Yeah, well, this is a really cool show, and it kind of really showcases plants in a nice way. And I put together this display of not just new plants, but also plants that are often overlooked as well.
Okay,
and of course, the market is changing all the time, and now we're maybe looking towards more sustainable, drought-tolerant plants. And so there's probably introductions from 10, 20 years ago that we can now revisit. So kind of on that display, which I've sent you some pictures of, and it really it's on a black background, and the pots are kind of like almost like floating as well. So there's a Penicetum, the gorgeous ornamental grass, which really got people's attention with these big feathery plumes as well.
I think this plant is in constant motion, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's a really good description. also, Agastache. Agastache is like such a great alternative to lavender, because it's like, especially talking from a UK perspective, easier to grow, easier to prune. It has a lovely fragrance. It's great for the bees and the butterflies. And there's a new variety called Beelicious Pink that has just picked up some awards as well.
And this is very begonias. Good. Yes. Sorry, for Agastas that you said, I think it's very good for the Mediterranean climate, like Athens.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It really loves a sunny position, very drought tolerant as well. So another great plant for a future, I would say. So, begonias. So kind of a lot of indoor, outdoor kind of plants as well. So I'm obsessed with the kind of Rex type begonias, the ones with the big leaves, and some of those are even iridescent these days. And there's a lovely big one called Black Forest. There was also one called Fireworks. And these are great for a shady spot outdoors on a balcony, but also as a houseplant, because I don't know about you guys there, but houseplants are a consistent trend, especially like beautiful foliage
plants. Here as well. Here as well.
Definitely.
This begonia was irresistible, and I saw it on my Instagram. It's just so great,
A couple more kind of in a similar vein, which are great for Mediterranean climates, is Semponium Destiny, which is like a black rosette. It's a type of aeonium crossed with a sempervivum. This is really gorgeous. Bred in the UK, and it's a succulent, so it can be grown, you know, without worry. You don't need to water it. It's hardy, looks after itself. So really cool plant. And Mangava, which is another hybrid, hybrid between agave and Manfreda. And they're from the US in Michigan. There's about 60 in the collection. And Praying Hands is one of the newest ones. And you'll see in the picture, it kind of has this... It does look like Praying Hands. It's got this beautiful look to it. Again, drought-tolerant plants, the more you water them, the more they grow. So they're really good as a house plant. They're really good as a landscaping plant as well. And really becoming quite popular in UK now.
Very nice.
And then the final one is a Plectranthus, also known as it's called Skeletal is the variety. And it is just amazing. The leaves look like feathers. It's like a red leaf with a golden edge. And this one's already picking up awards, voted for by the public as well. So that one is, it's more of a house plant, but also container plant, maybe for mixed containers outdoors too. So that was cool. And then, of course, the hydrangeas, which I know you love.
My
as
favorite,
well.
Yes.
Oh, the black leaf one is amazing.
Wow.
First Editions Eclipse, which is from Bailey Nurseries in the US. It has black foliage all through the summer, and it is just gorgeous. It's a macrophylla type, though, so it's quite – it needs a lot of water, so I don't know if necessarily good for your climate. But the Hydrangea paniculata groundbreaker is more of a drought-tolerant variety.
Really?
And this is one of the first ground cover hydrangeas as well. So look out for groundbreaker.
Yes, this is amazing. You know, you talk for plants in such a way that anyone who listens wants to buy it. It's incredible. You know,
really?
The way you talk about it, the way you describe it, all the foliage, the compact, it's amazing. That's why. That's
just
why you're traveling the world.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yes, very nice. Okay, amazing plants you described to us. Thank you very much. Let me say here that I will put the plants suggested by you with their Latin names and photos on Instagram, so everybody will take a good look of them. I want to ask you now, what are the best practices for selecting plants that thrive in Mediterranean climates? Let me. We said some succulents, of course, that they are desired plants for xeriscape, like our climate here, with drought tolerance, and we want plants, good plants, pollinators. Tell me some practices you use.
Yeah, so really, like anything succulent, so with a really fleshy leaf, so lots of sempervivum, sedum as well, lots of different types of those. Also, you know, potentially cactus as well, which can be grown. They're obviously fleshy, storing their own water and protecting themselves as well. Outside of that, then, you know, you guys are, you know, growing some of the best Mediterranean plants. You know, anything with a silver leaf is obviously reflecting the sun. So this is where lavender and helichrysum does
aromatic,
really well. And of course,
aromatic plants.
And of course, very naturally aromatic. And then the fragrance is even stronger because even oils are released in the heat as well. I think I really like things like verbena as a great drought tolerant plant, which is quite wispy. Lots of grasses, ornamental grasses tend to be relatively drought tolerant too. So yeah, I'm really kind of, I guess, looking towards the succulent silver kind of like simple flowers really. Yeah. And nothing too leafy, because the more something's leafy, the more kind of like hungry for water this is going to be.
Yes.
So, yeah, so definitely that kind of like low growing sort of vibe, really. As
great.
Well. Yeah. Something that probably grows as a wildflower for you guys, but like acanthus.
Okay.
You know, this lovely big plant with a gorgeous flowers that, you know, I often see growing wild in Spain and Greece. And I would love to grow it as well in my garden. So you're kind of lucky, a lot of the plants are already there growing wild, and you can then maximize on those as well. Yeah, definitely. So,
so nice. Thank you. You often talk about the therapeutic benefits of gardening. Can you share some insights on how gardening can improve mental health and well-being, particularly in urban settings?
Well, there's so much research that really does prove this, you know. Research in hospitals where there's, you know, gardens in the hospitals, and they bring the patients out to sit in the gardens, and they see improvements in those patients, or maybe even having plants in the room or in the ward. You know, I said to my local gym the other week, I said, you should really have some plants in here. I think people would perform much better. And I don't know any gym that is doing this yet. It could be really pioneering.
Very nice idea.
But, you know, being in nature, like, it lowers everything. It lowers our blood pressure, kind of slows our breathing. It's good for us. And I think if we kind of follow our instincts a lot more, we'll realize that we're always drawn to nature and pulled towards nature. And, like, we should take notice of that and let it happen.
Yes.
And, you know, chemicals are released in our brains when we're touching the soil. Grounding is, it feels like a promotional word, but grounding is a real thing. As well, we have to remember this, you know, being connected to the earth, and, you know, the electricity of that is a real phenomena. So,
as you said, recent studies have shown that getting dirty may lift your mood. Okay. And contact with soil improves our immune system and our microbiome. So we say that. I think you say that all the time, and I say that as well, because it's very crucial and essential people to know. Get more dirty with soil. That's the message here. Something else I want to say here is that since ancient times, the language of flowers has been established as a way of communicating feelings when they could not be expressed in words. So it's very, very essential to use, you know, just flowers can express our feelings as well. So it is a kind of therapy like that. When you cannot speak loud, just give some flowers. What do you think?
Yeah, but even kind of taking the colors of the flowers as well, and like there are certain colors make us feel different ways as well. So it could be, you know, purple is relatively soothing, sympathetic, whereas orange, very uplifting and kind of like, you know, punchy, whereas pink is perhaps more like lovable and soft, and white is pure. And so, yeah, I think not just the language of flowers, but also kind of the color, how the color affects you as well, is really important and very useful thing to get into as well.
Yes, because it depends what you want to say. You choose the color sometimes.
Totally. Yeah, definitely.
Well, now that's my favorite question for you. You are you've expressed your gratitude for being able to travel as often and as far as you do right now in your Instagram today. And you know, it's a blessing and your privilege to do that. Can you share a memorable experience or a unique plant discovery that left a significant impact on you? And I think we're going to traveling in Japan right now.
Also this week, I've been at the Japanese flower trials and some really cool plants there. There was a few that I've got to tell you about. So a really lovely drought-tolerant Mediterranean-style plant called a Dickia.
Yes.
And this looks like almost like an agave, and this is really silver. It looks otherworldly. It's very cool. For indoors, a plant that I found is a Chinese native plant. It's called Lusulia. And this is now being bred small, and it looks like it's almost similar to gardenia, but it has a pink flower, and the fragrance is amazing. So that is a houseplant to watch out for. Something you might grow in your slightly warmer climate already is Catharanthus. Lovely little plant with little – it's called periwinkle is the common name in UK. And there's newer types with much smaller flowers that are great for window boxes. And so there was a few of those around at the trials.
Yes. You know, we use it, Catharanthus, here. And we say it in Greek, Daphnula tis Madagascaris. We say that in Greece because it is a perennial, a very strong perennial. And this plant, definitely. Blooms every time and during heat stress. Yeah. And it's very good for us.
It's a very cool plant. Lots of different colors. I was actually in northern Italy at Letzuri back in June, and they're breeding a lot of new colors of Catharanthus as well.
Yes.
So really a lot to watch out for there. And then finally, Coleus. There's a really, really cool new peachy one that was just, I can't wait for that to come to Europe. It just looks amazing. And apparently it changes color later in the season as well.
We use it here very well. Yes, very much.
I have these all the time, and I'm really, I can't help but be naughty when it happens. I'll explain why. We talked before about the licorice, which is like this, like chorus licorice, which is an amazing kind of like spiky flower. Almost looks like a nereen, if anyone grows a nereen, which is like the same but in pink. And oh my god, I turned the corner today in a garden and there was a whole plantation of them, and I was just oh my gosh. But like even last week, like one of the most amazing plants we saw on the flower trials visits was a blue flowered cyclamen.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And sometimes you see a plant that really is a step forward in genetics and you're just like, whoa. But then there's also plants in nature, and you know, I've written a book, Hortus Curius, about, you know, 50 weird and wacky plants. And and in there, I, you know, my aim is to meet all of the plants that I've written about in the book. And one of them, the largest flower in the world, the Rafflesia arnoldii.
Wow.
I was really lucky to see this in Borneo about 5-6 years ago. And that was another moment where it was like, oh, I can't believe I've seen this plant in real life. It's just,
you are lucky,
amazing.
You know. You're very lucky.
I know.
So, I want this picture. I want this picture on my Instagram or yours. Just tag me, please, to share with the audience.
But yeah, it's just amazing. So really, I guess ahead, well, in my book, it's really a bucket list of plants that I want to meet in real life. That's probably a good way to describe it, to be honest.
Yes. Let me ask you, do these plants, all these great plants, amazing, that you saw, require any special growing conditions? For example, soil or fertilization?
Well, in terms of like the plants that I've seen in the wild, like the Rafflesia arnoldii, you couldn't grow this at home because this one actually needs to grow inside a rainforest vine. So that would be really, it's a parasite. So that would be really tricky.
Okay.
In terms of like different plants that I've seen in Japan this week around the flower trials, it's, I mean, there's a, I guess there's an assumption that the soil is acid because you see a lot of Acers and these sort of plants. But you know, a lot of these are kind of general day-to-day plants. A lot of them are really built for container work as well. Okay, so, you know, cyclamen are going to be as easy to grow as the ones in Europe. So there's not going to be, you know, too much of a problem. So the crossover is generally quite easy. But when I'm in Japan, it's just so exciting to see wild flowers and to be in the wild areas and know that those plants are ones that we cherish in our gardens in the UK. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like bamboo, you know, a really simple ground cover bamboo, the one Sassavicii. Is here everywhere, but we would love to grow this. And like Miscanthus, you know, this lovely decorative grass.
I love it.
Just a wild, a casual wild flower here.
It's just amazing. It blows my mind. Yeah. What do you prefer, perennials or seasonal plants?
Seasonal, maybe, because there's so much more. Okay. Interested. I can make interesting containers, change them up, la la la. So yeah.
Okay. Greens or blooms?
Oh, that's really hard because with greens you've got so many different textures, shapes. There's a lot you can do with greens. I'm going to say greens.
Greens. Okay. Indoor or outdoor plants?
These are so difficult. outdoor, because really people forget that every houseplant is an outdoor plant and it will be much happier outside.
Very nice answer and smart. Thank you. So, lawn or meadow mix?
It's meadow.
Meadow, yeah. Yes. Natural, more natural.
Yeah, definitely.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Coffee, me too. you're a Greek. Coffee. You are definitely a Greek one. Meat or veggies?
I love both, but both. I really do love vegetables and I will eat plate after plate of vegetables. Yeah.
Okay, now I'll tell that you are a food lover as well. You like food.
yeah,
me too. Yeah. Okay. Let's discuss now the role of technology in modern gardening. Are there any tools or apps you recommend for plant enthusiasts in Greece or in the world?
Yeah, I often shy away from the plant identification apps because they can sometimes have inaccuracies, and certainly you're not going to be able to identify it down to the variety. You know, it will be a very rough identification. And people might not realize, but on Facebook, for example, there are some great identification groups that you can actually join and kind of get this effect there. So I would kind of push people towards that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But really, one of the best apps we have is Instagram, and this is because you can connect with other people, you can show your garden, it's very visual, you can connect with people that like the same very niche plant that you like. You know, there's so much potential with Instagram, and really if I had Instagram or any social media platform when I was younger, I probably wouldn't have felt so alone in my love of plants, and I would have felt there were more people out there that liked plants the way I did as well. So it would have been nice to know that. So I think, yeah, Instagram, social media generally, it's just amazing. I think
Instagram has the most power community for plants. Yeah, you're very right. Yes.
Totally, yeah.
So now I have a confession to make. Are you ready?
Yeah. Go on.
Your podcast with Ellen Murray has gained significant popularity in the UK and worldwide, I say. Also, it was my inspiration for my plant podcast here in Greece. What strategies did you use to grow your listening base and be your podcast very popular? None.
It's hard to answer. Because most of I don't know how I go through life is like with instinct and just doing what feels right at the time. And so it was really just, and I think Ellen and I, we both work very similarly as well. So we kind of like really both work instinctively. We just like to do a good job. And I guess we were, if there was any strategy, we were just wanting to choose good guests, interesting guests.
Yes.
Not to worry about, but actually, Yes. It's making me think on my feet a little bit. I think part of that is that, like, even with what I do, I never look at competitors. So I always just do what I do and don't worry about what other people are doing.
Yes.
And I think with the podcast, we were really the same. And we didn't want to interview, like, who other people were interviewing. We just went down our own route and didn't feel any pressure to do a certain thing or to cover a certain subject, and just did it authentically. And that's really what I do myself in social media. And that is, yeah, I think that's the answer, really. Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't sure I could answer that. And then I realized that is, yeah, that's what I do, really.
Yes, yeah. Thank you very much. That's very good things no you share here with us. So now I have another crucial question for you. You have been a powerful advocate for bringing plants closer to people's everyday lives, fostering a stronger connection between individual and nature. In Greece, although we have a rich biodiversity and a history of agricultural practices, plants are still often viewed more as ornamental than essential to our urban and personal well-being. What do you believe it will take to change the cultural perspective in Greece, making plants a fundamental part of our lives, homes, cities, not just for aesthetic reasons, but as a means to enhance quality of life, health, sustainability in the face of challenges like climate change? Do you have any proposals?
Yeah, really interesting because, yeah, like maybe, I don't know, even 7-8 years ago in UK, plants were not really respected in the same way, and they weren't really in the mainstream. And I feel like they're now in the mainstream. And this kind of came through a few different routes, really. I mean, social media has obviously really helped with that. The pandemic helped as well.
Yes,
but it was really starting before before the pandemic. So it really, social media drove this. And I think mental health, people starting to talk about well-being and mental health that then tied into that at the same time.
Okay.
So it really starts from social media and kind of ambassadors like ourselves to kind of get the message out there. And at some point, the mainstream, so then the media, realizes that plants is a thing that's being talked about on social media. So maybe we need to talk about it on radio, on TV. And then it starts to become almost like product placement. And so people then see plants maybe on a TV show, or maybe they start to be used to decorate a clothes store, or and maybe a high street store starts selling plants, and it kind of just happens that way. And I believe it really starts with social media, you know, which is where a lot of things start these days, actually. But yeah, and I feel like in the UK, plants are really in the mainstream now. They really kind of arrived, and people respect them. They see them in lots of different places. The demographic of plant buyers is completely mixture now as well. Yes. So older people, younger people, kind of, and it's seen as an essential thing to decorate your home indoors, you know. So it probably starts with indoor first, because everyone has got the potential to grow a plant indoors. Not everyone has a balcony or an outdoor space. Houseplants is probably the starting point for that, even though that's not – even though that's not the end point, I think that's where you need to start, if you get what I mean.
That's very that's very good answer. Thank you very much. We know how to start. We do it. The more we talk about plants, the more we get used to it, the more we liked it. And when we talk the way you talk about plants, we want to buy it. I said. Okay. Tell me now, and tell our audience, three top florist exhibitions you recommend for both consumers and trade professionals looking for inspiration and the latest trends.
Yeah, there's a really, really good week in the Netherlands, in Holland, also in Germany, called the Flower Trials. And this is usually the second week of June. And this is when about 60 different breeders open their greenhouse doors and show brand new plants to the trade. That is an essential date on the calendar. There's also a very good trade show in Germany in January called IPM, which is a good kind of cross-section of the industry, not just plants, but also accessories, hard goods, kind of even machinery as well. And then something at consumer level is probably Chelsea Flower Show, which is very famous in the UK. But then maybe also Gardeners World Live, which is a real people show, which is kind of like where you'll meet the real everyday gardeners as well. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few suggestions for you there.
Wow, thank you very much. I have a final question for you. How does it feel to be so popular when it comes to plants and to be invited all over the world for workshops and lectures like now you're in Japan? Tell us, how does it feel? How do you feel?
I don't know, just normal. I'm just spreading my love of plants, and that's just really instinctive to me, and it's not I'm never worried about, you know, the number of followers or getting more followers or building this or that. I just want to enjoy myself and kind of be authentic and just do cool stuff with plants and spread the word and have new ideas and encourage people to think in different ways and not think, because people can panic about plants and, I'm going to get it wrong or is it going to die? Yeah. Or like,
I dial the plants and things like that, yes.
Yeah, and so I hate that. And so that's where I also hate rules, because then people start to worry about getting it right and, like, at the end of the day, what is right, you know? And so, yeah, I just want people to chill out and enjoy plants, really.
Yes.
We should put that on a T-shirt. That sounds cool, actually.
Thank you very much for all the tips you shared with us tonight. I am confident that your presence on my podcast will inspire many to join me in exploring the magical world of plants. Thank you, Michael, for making this episode so special. I look forward to speaking again to you or meeting you at Current Flower Shows. Thank you so much.
No worries, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for having me here.
Δεν θα μπορούσα να είμαι πιο ευγνώμων για τη συμμετοχή του Μάικλ και τη ζεστή του παρουσία. Ελπίζω να απολαύσατε αυτό το επεισόδιο τόσο όσο και εγώ. Μπείτε στη διαδικασία να επισκεφτείτε κάποιες από τις εκθέσεις που σας πρότεινε ο Μάικλ και μέχρι το επόμενο επεισόδιο, για να είστε καλά, να φροντίζετε τα φυτά σας.
Ακούσατε το Plant Podcast με τη Μαριάννα Ράπου, μια παραγωγή του soundist.gr. Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundist, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcast και σε όποια άλλη πλατφόρμα επιλέγετε να ακούτε podcast.